Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Bros Pod is, of course, brought to you by BetOnline. Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all of the latest sports developments, including updated odds on NBA playoffs, fights, and even next season's futures. And don't forget that Major League Baseball is back as well. Who are you picking to win the World Series? BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's easy to get started, so head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use our promo code BELEAV, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Everybody, and welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. I'm Bill Roden. I've been traveling from east to west. I'm now in Phoenix, kind of made it here safely and soundly. Here's bright, of course, Valley of the Sun. It's sunny, hot as hell, but it's all good, you know. And I know, Jamal, you're back in Brooklyn holding it down. What's going on?
Yeah, back in Brooklyn, it's sunny, but not as hot yet. We're still in the 50s out here, so you know we're waiting on this. I don't know. I think we skip spring and go straight from winter to summer nowadays. So I'm waiting on this summer weather to get here.
But everything it's here. I can send you some back in a rocket ship. Summer is definitely here. Yeah, man. So what we got on the agenda today?
So we got two very, very special guests. We're going to talk about, some big things that they have going on apart and together. But first, we got the great Gary Charles, New York City grassroots basketball legend and founder and CEO of ABIS, which is Advancement of Blacks in Sports. And we also, of course, have Dave Leto, vice chairman and strategic management at ABIS, but also a former head coach at DePaul and also the University of Virginia. And he's currently working with Overtime Elite. So Gary and Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us. Two legends in the field.
Yes.
I just saw Gary maybe last month in New York. And Dave, man, I haven't seen you in years, man.
It's been a long time, but we stay connected because I follow you, but most importantly, Bill, I follow the words of wisdom that you've poured into people like myself over the years, and especially relevant today, you know, some of the words of wisdom that you were dropping on all of us, especially as young coaches, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. So I appreciate you for who you are and what you've done for Black men in general, but for me, a Black coach navigating through this business.
Hey, thank you so much. You know, the thing I miss, both you, Dave, and Gary, you know, the thing I miss, and this goes back to missing Big John. But remember at the Final Fours, we would always get together at the Final Fours. It'd be Black coaches, writers, a lot of young coaches, and, you know, Chaney and John and Nolan and Ralph would be there. And, man, that was just such great sessions. And, I really, really miss it. In fact, I went to the Women's Final Four this year for the first time, actually. For the first time in all the years I've been going, I went to the Women's Final Four this year. And wound up writing a column that seemed to me that Dawn Staley is almost becoming the John Thompson of the industry. Mm-hmm. And I was hoping maybe we'll do it next year, to do the same thing with those coaches that we did with the men's coaches, you know, kind of had the same sort of thing. But man, those things were really priceless. You know, those gatherings were really, really priceless.
Sunday nights, Bill, Sunday nights, yep. Lock ourselves in a room for hours on end, yep. And just go back. Yep. And that kind of what I was saying. And, you know, the thing about Big John, God rest his soul, is what I picked. One, he was such a profound speaker, but it wasn't just his presence or his tone, but he always spoke from an angle that nobody in the room was thinking of.
And, and
was, you know, almost exclusively every time you heard him speak. And for me, as a colleague, but also a competitor, it was awe-inspiring because, you know, the whole Georgetown experience for a Black person, and in case of Black man and a Black coach, represented what I wanted to be, not just as a coach, but as a human being. So I hung on every word, but it was always something like, doggone it, I wasn't thinking of that. And I don't think anybody in the room was thinking of that. And then the commonality between the challenges of coaches as it relate to players and the challenges from you all that you face in the media, you know, those similarities kind of brought us together and helped one another kind of navigate through everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, Gary, you went to a lot of those too. So why don't we, Gary, why don't you tell us about what you've been involved with? I'd like to hear from both you and Dave, what you've been involved with. You know, I guess what we all have to go through, and it's not have to, it's just life. You know, like Dave, you look at from the time you got into the business, both first you play, then you serve your apprenticeship as an assistant, and then you climb the ladder, and then you finally get your job, get your shot. And then there comes to be a point in all our lives, like us, me, Wilbon, all that, you know, I mean, Wilbon owns the industry now, but you know, you want to be a sports writer, then you want to be a columnist. Then you certainly get to a point when you're in your 60s or even older that you're thinking, okay, what now? What next? You know, what do we want to do now to extend the legacy and all that? So I guess that's a kind of way of asking, you know, how are you guys extending the legacy, you know, based on this whole evolution of what we all go through as players, coaches, and then other aspects of the industry. So why don't you guys talk about what you're doing and how that extends sort of your legacy and your impact of what you're trying to do in the sport?
You know, I was listening to you and Dave just now, Bill, tell some stories. And I want to start off by saying that I remember Coach John Chaney because I was at Chaney State when he was the men's coach at Chaney.
Oh, wow.
And Vivian Stringer was the women's coach. But Coach John Chaney was also my gym teacher. So I always remember him stopping class 10 minutes early, having to sit down and talk to us about life lessons. And I've never forgotten those life lessons. And it's amazing how we come full circle in trying to get some things together. And so some of the ideas I've had go back that far because of Coach Chaney. And obviously after the George Floyd murder, it did something to all of us. And I think at that time, you know, Dave and I felt that we needed to come together and create an organization and that could make a difference in a lot of people's life. And this is how ABIS, Advancement of Blacks in Sports, you know, came to fruition, gathering all the Black coaches, but not just on the men's side, but also on the women. On the women's side, like the Dawn Staley, as you mentioned, and the Joni Taylor and the Vivian Stringer, it almost took on a life of its own. But then we were able to stretch it out to other sports, you know, baseball, football, track and field, gymnastics, even fencing and surfing, you know, which I didn't even know Black people even surf. So another story. And obviously, Jamal came in, you know, Jamal Murphy, because one of the things that concerns us is that we need to change the narrative. We need to be the ones to tell our stories instead of someone else telling our story, which is always wrong. And so that's extremely important as to part of our mission in making some things happen. Dave, I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, so Gary is exactly right and why we started. And, you know, there's so much commonality between oppressed people, you know, over hundreds of years. And so after the George Floyd murder, I think it struck a chord with everybody and that we got sick and tired of being sick and tired, as Gary would say. And as a result, you know, as you mentioned, Bill, when you get to the age we're at, you're like, OK, well, I go to work tomorrow and do what I normally do. But that's just, you know, not enough. So how can we rally everybody? We've got student athletes who have to take a back seat. We got, you know, administrators who have had to take a back seat. We got hiring practices, which are not fair. We've got everything across the board. And so how can we create a unified voice that will somehow, you know, continue to attack the establishment or put them on notice finally that we are here and we are a voice that has to be reckoned with. And so the beauty of it is that it was easy to get people that look like us to join, because everybody in every space, you know, has a story to tell about how they have been left behind, forgotten about, and unfairly treated. So in essence, we grew a lot faster than we could ever imagine. As Gary said, we spread, you know, hey, we've been involved in basketball our whole lives, but we found out that the women are as probably not as, but more powerful in their attempt to do what they need to do than we are. Right. And then you talk to a volleyball coach and see, oh my goodness, this is what's going on in your sport. And across the board, not just collegiately, but on a grassroots level, on a professional level, there's so much work that needs to be done, and we could make a difference. And so as we, you know, as you mentioned, grow in our 60s and beyond, what can we do and what we can give back and honor, you know, the people that need us, but also the people that have fought before us. And so it became a labor of love. It's a lot of work, as we all know, but when you put, you know, good faith effort into it and you attack the people who have been doing you wrong for so many years, it becomes that labor of love. And we've made a difference in a lot of areas, but we certainly have a lot of work to do from this point on.
Talk about some of the areas that you guys have made a difference, because I know you guys have done a lot. As Gary mentioned, you know, I've been, you know, involved to some extent. I've written articles about ABIS and about some of the issues that there are in the games now. But talk about some of the things that you feel like you've been able to accomplish already in such a short time.
You know, I think we've done, you know, a couple of things, and sometimes it's hard to keep up, right? You know, one of the first things that we did, we were involved with Travis Williams, a former head coach at Tennessee State. We had an idea about an HBCU All-Star game during the Final Four. And when he approached the NCAA, the marketing group kind of like stole his idea and made it their own. And he came to us for help. And as I like to tell people, not on my watch. And so we had our lawyers reach out to Brent Crump, who's actually part of us. He's on the advisory board. And we put our heads together to figure out how could we combat that. And we did. Reached out to CBS. Once CBS found out the truth and understanding in that climate, they didn't want any problems. So they canceled a contract that they had with someone else and gave it to his proper owner, which was Travis Williams. And because of that, this year, for the first time, there was an HBCU All-Star game during the Final Four. That was big. That was really big. I was there. It was tremendous. It was great. So now it's going to happen every year. So that's one thing that we've done.
Hey Gary, I want to hold on to that point, because, you know, we always get our shit stolen. Could you just take me through how did that happen? How did the thievery happen? And then you can talk about how we got it back. Because our stuff is always getting
all the time.
You know, taken.
All the time. And that was the reason why I wasn't going to let it happen this time. And David and I and other people put our heads together to combat that. But what ended up happening was this. Travis went to the NCAA. The NCAA thought it was a great idea and took it to their marketing arm. So the marketing arm took it to CBS like it was their own. And CBS cut the contract with the marketing arm of the NCAA. So the NCAA, to some degree, weren't even aware of the whole story. Okay, at least that's what they're sticking with. But anyway, so the point was that once Travis reached out to Rob Lanier, who at the time was the head coach at Georgia State, he's now the new coach at SMU, he said, we need to call Gary Charles from ABIS. So we did, and I heard Travis' story. And I said, just like you just said, Bill, I said, man, this happened to us every single day. But you know what? Not on my watch. It's not going to happen. So obviously, you know, you go out there and you reach out to a Brent Crump. And then I reached out to CBS, some of the people over there, telling them what we were about to do, that we were going to organize a march, we were going to kill them and everything else. And CBS was basically like, whoa, we weren't aware of this. And obviously Travis had all the proof in the world that this was his. And once we were able to get that together, CBS, canceled that contract with their marketing arm and said, okay, Travis, let's work. And Felicia Hall Allen, who's kind of like, if Dave's the right hand, she's the left hand of ABIS in regards to, along with myself. So she got involved too and helped help Travis construct the contract. And now he has a couple year deal with CBS for the HBCU All-Star game.
What mistake, if he had to do it all over again, although it's turned out to be a happy ending, what would you have done that you didn't do in terms of allowing, you know, the marketing arm or whoever that is to take the idea?
I think from a Travis standpoint, he wouldn't have been as trusting. He would have had his lawyer attached to his hip, you know, at that time to make sure everything, you know, went at the way it was supposed to. But, you know, we're good natured people. And we think things are going to work out the way they're supposed to. As you know, Bill, they don't. You and I, Dave, we've been around for a long time. You know, Jamal, he's the puppy here in this group. Okay, you know, but we've been there, done that. And as I tell people all the time, we waited 400 years. We're not waiting anymore. And we're not taking it anymore as far as some of the things. We're not trying to create problems. We're just trying to avoid them and try to get a fair chance here.
How does this organization, you know, we keep talking about evolution. And, you know, the evolution was, you know, Black Coaches Association. That was sort of like a major deal, right? You know, I mean, when that came around, that was like a big deal. Rudy Washington, that name, Rudy Washington. By the way, I just heard from Rudy Washington around the Super Bowl. But
wow,
let's not. But anyway, but how has this organization evolved from the Black Coach Association? Problems does it attack that maybe the BCA did not or was not equipped to attack?
So you know, as you know, we've been around long enough to know, and I became part of the BCA in 1988. It started right. Seven, so from its infancy, you know, to the end, and I think the BCA's focus were helping Black coaches advance. In hiring, but just instability because there were not that many coaches, and it was more geared towards basketball and maybe a little bit of football. So if you went to a BCA convention, and I know you've been to them, Bill, you know it was 300-500 basketball coaches, sprinkled in with a few other people. Now, so that was the core at the start of ABIS. But it wasn't just college basketball coaches. It was college basketball coaches, and then it was grassroots coaches because we needed to form a uniform front because it was about our kids. And as one of our coaches stated, you know, we have the oil and we keep giving it away, right? Because our kids are controlled by this establishment and not by us. But we need to come together on a grassroots level and on a collegiate level. And then as we started this thing, Bill, we found out if we've got to include the women's coaches, right? And we found out that they are a powerful, powerful group that are well organized and well intended, but they suffer from the same thing. So as we did that, we found out football needed our help. Then we found out that, as Gary mentioned before, volleyball and every other sport. And so the difference is that is an inclusion of everybody in sports, okay, not just singular in nature. And so when you do that, you find out that there are a lot of issues that you have to tackle along those lines. And so I think at our beginning stage, we're only a little bit more than a year old. So we're still putting the building blocks together and the foundation to build for a long, long period of time. But we want to be looked at as the NAACP for sports. And in order to do that, you've got to cover a lot of. So I think it's much more vast than the BCA was. But we're certainly growing. So we're not nearly even as powerful as the BCA had been in its heyday.
You guys are doing, you know, like you mentioned, there's a lot that's involved. You know, just to mention a couple of things on the coaching front, I love the watch lists that you all put together. You know, whether it's college basketball, Black coaches that need to be recognized that deserve to be considered for bigger jobs. You've done it for the men's coaches. You're highlighting assistant coaches. You've done it for the women's coaches. I saw that. I believe you did it for football coaches as well.
We did. Yeah. Not only did we do it for football, we did the NFL and we did the college. But I'll tell you what's interesting, though. We did it for volleyball. What do we know about volleyball? Okay. But we did it for volleyball. And let me just tell you a story about that. So we put the watch list out. And one day I get a phone call from a radio station actually based out of Chicago. And he said to me, hey, Gary, I had a young lady on and she just became the head coach of Siena. And I asked her, how did that happen? She said, well, a watch list came out. ABI has created this watch list. And I was on that watch list. And next thing I know, I get a phone call from Siena and I'm the head coach. So my point is, we went in tune to that. We put the list out, okay? And this young lady became a head coach. So just to show you the reach that we've been able to achieve, as Dave mentioned, in a short period of time, in volleyball. And we're not just doing volleyball, as we talked about. Not only those sports, baseball, we did one for track and field, you know, also. So we don't want to leave anyone out. And I think what's important, Jamal, about this is this. Too many times, the search firm and these ADs say, well, we don't know who these black people are. Really? Well, here's the cheat sheet. We're going to give it to you. So now there's no excuse. And a year ago, as Dave's mentioned to people, you know, some people, last year with the job that were open on the basketball side, over 50% of those jobs went to minorities on the men and women side. That's never happened before.
Right.
So we're proud of that.
And do you see that continuing? You know, I don't know if it's always going to be 50%, but do you see it? Are you encouraged by, you know, that it can continue?
Yes. So I'd say this. We had a party this year at the Final Call. It was the ABIS Day party. And what was interesting about it, that some of the search firm came to the party seeking us out, shaking hands. We're sitting down. We're talking with them. That didn't happen before. Some of the ADs came. Okay. And the reason I believe it's going to continue, Jamal, because we're not going to take our foot off their neck. All right. We're going to continue to keep this, you know, making this to happen. And again, not in a nasty way, but just in the right way. It's time for this to happen. We're not going to let them forget it. And let me give you another thing. Okay. In the NFL, 90% of the starters are black. In the NBA, 95% of the starters are black. Right. In the Power 5 Division 1 football, 90% of the NFL of the starters in college are black in football and basketball. Are you trying to tell us we can't coach us? Right. No, that has to change.
And it's interesting also because, like you said, there are other sports, volleyball, baseball, and Bill and I talked about this, I think on the last episode, whereas that's true. And that's the egregious side of it, right? That, you know, you have these sports that are dominated by black people on the field and you can barely get, black people hired as coaches, but that can't be the only justification for a black person to be able to coach in those areas. So if it's baseball, it just has to be, you know, black people know baseball also. It has nothing to do with how many people are on the field. So you have to kind of look at it both ways. Like you said, the basketball and football is egregious. Yes. But it goes beyond all that. And it's just, you know, if we are, some of the people that are looking for those jobs and have that expertise, we should be given the chance.
Well, you know, without a doubt. And all we're asking for is a fair chance. You can't turn around and think that we don't deserve those same opportunities that all blacks are, let's say, just recruiters. You know, Jamal, I know sometimes people think I go to the extreme, but it wasn't that long ago they thought we couldn't be a quarterback, okay?
Right.
And that it wasn't that long ago, you know, we couldn't play baseball. It wasn't that long ago they thought we had to drink out of a different water fountain and that we had to sit in the back of the bus or we had to use a different bathroom. Now, how stupid does those things look now? Right. So this is no different than that, in that everyone deserves the opportunity based on their skills. And that's all we're asking for.
And Jamal, two points that come to light for me is, you know, part of our board now is a gentleman by the name of Herb Courtney. Herb Courtney happens to be the only black search firm in college sports.
Yeah, and I wrote about him for The Undefeated a few months ago.
So it's our job to kind of help him establish himself. As Gary just mentioned, not to just be the first, but we want to make sure that he's competing against other Black firms,
right? You
know, 5 years from now. Right. So we've got to create awareness. So we got to do those things. To Gary's point about the percentages of athletes who participate. So when we started, and there's a lot of things, as you probably know, that we've put our hands on, ACT, SAT, hiring practices that we're talking about. The other is if you're in the Final Four or at the Final Four, which we all know is a crown jewel of college basketball and one of the crown jewels of sports, right. It's the financial entity that runs the NCAA. Right. So when you go to those four teams that make it, you know, the three to four to five of the starters on each one of the team are all Black, you know. And so we'll right. go back to Bill's, you know, profound of maybe the most powerful book I've ever read, The $40 Million Slave. That's the slave labor. But yet behind the scenes, I think the number, Gary, correct me if I'm wrong, there are 20 vendors that do business with the NCAA, none of which are Black. So we can participate. We'll let you even coach a little bit, but we're certainly not going to let you make the money that we're making off of your sweat equity. And so those are the things that we've had to bring to light. We understand that change is not going to happen overnight. So that's why we're here to kind of, you know, continue to push the envelope and understand that if, you know, it's one of our colleagues said, we're going to have to shame you into change if we can't name you into change.
There are a couple of things. When you just said the shaming part, it occurred to me, and I think it probably happened with this last administration, when, you know, it used to be that you could actually shame people. You know, white people were actually, you know, ashamed of racism, even kind of ashamed by the obscene privilege that they've gotten. But it seemed like the big change of that last generation, that last administration, was that the dissolution of shame. In other words, it's almost like telling white people, you know, you don't have to be shamed anymore. You know, in fact, embrace your privilege, you know. And I guess George Floyd kind of was so bizarre that it I guess we're kind of dealing with white folks' shame a little bit. But hey, I was wondering what you guys thought about that. And my larger question to both of you guys is, what is the consistent issue that we've been facing in terms of getting control of these industries, you know, whether we're involved in them as players or not? I mean, you know, it seems like.
But Bill, one of the main issues is that the people who are making the decision don't look like us. And it goes back to what I think a lot of us have been trying to explain to these athletes is that you don't have to just bounce the basketball or just throw the ball. There's other things that you can do as part of this industry that can make you just as powerful, okay? Whether it's becoming a coach or administrator, you know, and those type of things, all right? That's the problem, in that when you're being interviewed, they don't look like us, and they already have this preconceived notion. So we need to start grooming some of our kids, start coaching our kids into those type of positions that you can make a lot of money doing that. These industries are $1 billion of industries. And the thing is that the average, you know, athlete in some of these sports lasts 4.5 years. What are you going to do after that? We have to continue to keep educating them. And it's interesting that you're asking that, Bill, because one of the things that we started with the financial coaching program for some of these schools, J.P. Morgan gave us a grant, and shout out to J.P. Morgan for doing that. And they gave us a grant, and we started a pilot program with St. John University and Hofstra University. And what we're doing is we are teaching these collegiate athletes, how do you open up a checkbook? What's the credit rating? What's the interest rate? How do you get a mortgage? How do you invest? Because as you know, you don't know what you don't know. And when you're young and people don't tell you, you know, how are you supposed to make these things happen? Well, we're making that difference. We're teaching them the right things at this point. And because it went so well this year, J.P. Morgan is now giving us opportunity to do 12 schools in September. But half of them, we told them, had to be HBCUs. So half those schools are going to be HBCU schools, okay? So I think we're making a difference from that perspective too.
And Bill, so you know, the perspective of you know, we look at it from our vantage point as the oppressed. Let's look at it from the oppressor, right? So baseball wanted to speed up the length of the game. So when you go, the goes to extra innings, you put a man on second right now, right? So basically, you've had a man on second base for every inning of every game, and we have.
So you
have a better chance to win. So why would you change if you don't have to? So now if we're telling you that this collectively has to change, you know, and as you said, their privileges, you know what? Yeah, I've had a man on second and I also had a man on third and you couldn't do anything about it. So now, you know, as we talk about it, not only the shaming part come in, but the structure, as Gary mentioned, to involve yourself in every aspect of how do you make this better so that you have an opportunity to change the narrative. So this is what I'm trying to use common sense and everything I do. What's the difference between what happened in New York City to Eric Garner and what happened in Minneapolis, Minnesota to George Floyd? The answer is nothing. It was exactly the same, but one was innocent and one was guilty. Why? Because the nation and an international community was in an uproar. So in our small space at ABIS, we're going to create and keep an uproar so that you look at things a little bit differently now than you ever have. In every aspect, whether it's financial literacy, whether it's hiring practices, whether it's post-collegiate jobs, whether it's all the things that we have been shut out from over such a long period of time. You know as well as we do, it's yeoman's work. It doesn't, you know, happen overnight, but we are knocking on the door as our forefathers have, Coach Thompson, Coach Chaney, Coach Richardson, Coach Raveling, and we're going to continue to do it because we have to and we need to.
Yeah, I think it's such a great concept, and it's a never-ending concept. You know, I was thinking, Gary, as you were describing the grant that you were given, as such a great idea at the college level, but I was also thinking that it'd probably be great to have that same pilot program at a high school level. You know,
and Bill, yeah. you're absolutely right, and eventually we're going to, but obviously we have to get started because we've discussed that. That we need to start even younger, all right, to get in these kids' head before they even get to college. You know, look, it's kind of like, you know, what I tell people all the time, you know, people aren't born racist, okay? Right. That's a learned craft, you know, so to speak, because that's the narrative that they've been told. Right. I tell this famous story in that I was 16 years old before I found out that Cleopatra was not Elizabeth Taylor, okay? Right. And those are these concepts that we have to change and we have to continue to keep teaching. So I'm with you, Bill, on that. You know, we've talked about that in starting younger, but obviously we had to start somewhere.
Right.
And literally we're talking to the NBA about a pilot like that for high school.
Right. Yeah. And again, I mean, anything you do, there are like a million different ways to pick at it. So, oh, you should do this, you do that. So I think, you know, you're absolutely right. It's great that you have to start. And then you improvise off of, you know, you know what you at least get started. And Dave, talk about the program, not the program, but the enterprise you're involved in.
Yeah. So last year, and funny because Gary and I had been talking about it for a long time. He started on the advisory board for the company Overtime, which is based in New York, and they also have offices in LA. But what they wanted to do was create another avenue for athletes to go through this process to become professional basketball players, NBA and elsewhere, Europe and G League and those kind of places. And so about 2 years ago, or a little bit more than that, they took the idea to fruition and, you know, started to manufacture interest and fundraising. And last year, long story short, the details of which it probably won't bore you with, but Kevin Ollie got the job as the head coach of Overtime Elite. Kevin and I go back to 1991 when he was a high school athlete in Crenshaw in South Central. But we've kept in contact. We're, you know, together like brothers. I came to work with him and created another avenue. You know, it's funny, we complain about the one avenue that there always has been. go from high school to college, college to the NBA or to Europe, and then kind of on from there. This was another opportunity. So we got 26 athletes from around the world. Most of them are American, about half a dozen from Europe and other places. Brought them to here in Atlanta, paid them as professional athletes, took them out of their high schools, and they've had to forego their college experience and invest in training in every aspect of their life, not just the basketball, which is obvious, but, you know, continue their academic pursuits to get their high school diploma. As Gary mentioned, one of the things that we've talked about, financial training, life coaching, all the things that they need to be professionals as, so that when they walk away from here, they're more prepared to go into the world and not only play basketball, but be successful in that venture. We're just coming up on the end of year one. It's been really, really successful in our first year, so much so that we're going to expand from 26 to now 30 players. We're going to mention in another week, you know, how we're going to expand our team base to be outside of Atlanta. We just this week at the Final Four in New Orleans, Mark Emmert from the NCAA met with the ownership here, and we signed this week our first high school player to a scholarship. So he will not get paid and will retain his college eligibility. So we think it's a game changer. So now that you can come here and get kind of almost like the prototype of what European, the young Real Madrids right. of the world do to, in their training to produce professional athletes, bringing that here to America and having another option. It may not be the best or the only thing to do, but it's an option versus the monopoly that has been high school to college, college to professional ranks. And so it's taken on a life of its own now that the public understands a little bit more about it. And the interest has been great. Over time, as you probably know, is a social media company that has made a lot of money and uploading videos from stars across the country. I think the biggest it was Zion Williamson and what right. he was doing when he was in high school. And so it has been able to expand and get, you know, fundraising from a lot of places. We've got probably almost 30 NBA players who have invested. We've got NBA ownership. We've got Drake. We've got Jeff Bezos. We've got a lot of other people that have joined up because I think they think this is a really good idea. And most importantly, an alternative to a system that a lot of people thought was broken.
Right. Gary, let me ask you, I know ABIS has a couple things coming up and I wanted you to let us know about that. But first, just one last question and kind of sticking to the young athlete, the young black athlete topic that we've been talking about a little bit. You're coming from a grassroots background. You already mentioned before how that's a big part of ABIS, the grassroots coaches and reaching the kids at a younger age. And you mentioned, you know, giving away the oil and that type of thing. How do you envision, you know, changing that grassroots system and maybe doing a better job of educating the kids at a younger age? Because one of the things that we always talk about nowadays, and we talk about who has the power, we know that the highest paid athletes have a lot of power, but a lot of times they're silent on issues. I'm wondering, you know, if they're educated at a younger age and taught in a different way at a younger age, could that change the landscape also?
Yeah. Well, first thing we have to do is that we have to educate the grassroots coaches. I think that once you educate them, then they go back and educate the kids. Because what's happened is that they keep hearing one story, or parents and other people hearing, you know, a particular story. So within ABIS, you know, we try to come together and explain exactly what's going on. So now these grassroots coaches who are with these kids at a young age can explain the situation to them. Not only explain to them the power that they have. Okay. Because right now they all seem to think they don't have any power. Some do, but a lot of them don't think so. So we have to continue to keep spreading that word to explain to them. If they come together, changes could be made. Because all too often, they've been told, no, you don't, by someone who really don't know. This is part of the way that we're going to be able to change this. And, you know, Jamal, you started to say something. This is part of the reason why we're putting an event together, okay? I've always felt that we didn't need to wait for someone else to validate how powerful we are. So the reason for doing the Champion and Legends Weekend Gala, and that's a big thing. It's a, I shouldn't say weekend gala. It's a weekend of events, because we're starting on Friday, you know, with a golf. Then we do professional development. We're doing a welcome reception that Friday night, and it's an all white affair. So you got, so Bill, make sure you have your white on, okay? And then on Saturday, we're doing more development classes.
That's a shout.
And having Ben Crump speak, and then the gala that night. And Bill, put your formal attire on now, Bill. Okay. And then on Sunday, we're gonna do a gospel brunch. But the point is, the reason we're doing this because we need to celebrate some of the famous sports figures that we have produced that people don't seem to be aware of. Okay. And we start off with Bill, for example. And we're naming we're gonna have the William C. Roden Sports Media Award. People need to know all the things that Bill has done in his life. Okay, I cannot tell you when I started speaking about Bill, how many people said, "Oh, I didn't know that," and because of that, that award is going to be named after him forever. And this year, the first person who's going to receive that award is Jemele Hill. With all the things she's been through, all the things that she's done, we just thought that she would be the perfect person to receive that, and she was honored. She was honored to be receiving Bill's award. All right, but it's not just about Bill, right? We're doing other people. I can still remember as a young kid watching these Olympians raise their fist. I wasn't sure what's going on, but I knew it was a powerful moment. And I've never forgotten that as long as I've lived. And so now we're going to do the John Carlos / Tommy Smith Social Justice Award. And it's going to go to Dr. Richard Latchick. And if you don't know who that is, look it up. Powerful man. And on, Dr. J, the Lifetime Achievement Award. Who doesn't know Dr. J? Okay, so the Vivian Stringer Pioneer Award. Again, like I tell people, I was at Cheney when Coach Vivian Stringer was the women coach. It was unbelievable. I'll never forget the thing that these women did, you know, at that school. There was more people watched the women game than did the guys. And John Cheney was the coach, and the guys were pretty good. But that's how powerful that was. So now Dawn Staley is going to be receiving that award. That's powerful stuff. Okay. And Bill, here's something you're going to like. So I told people that whoever gets these awards, it doesn't matter the sport or whatever it is. So we have the Eddie Robinson Leaders of Athletes Awards. Jamal, guess who's getting that award this year?
Who?
Shaheen Holloway.
Ah, nice.
Not bad, right?
Yes.
Think about that. See, now, as soon as I said it, you understand why he's getting it. So those are the things that we're doing, and we want to educate people every year why these people are receiving these particular awards. The Jackie Joyner Kersee Excellence Award. Come on now. Just name after her. And Allison Phillips is going to be receiving that.
Oh, that's right.
So we're proud of what we're able to create, and this is going to be an every year thing. Okay? And we're so honored that Bill has agreed to allow us to use his name, for the awards. But he's earned that. So now every year when we tell these stories, people can't say they don't know who William Roden is. And these kids are going to be talking about this in school. That's the purpose of all of this.
Naming rights, huh? That's another conversation off air.
That's another conversation, Bill. That's another conversation. And you know what? So we have the Shaquille O'Neal Economic and Sustainability Award. And again, that was really for people to know what some of our sport figures out there doing. And this year, Albert King is getting that. And people are like, who's Albert King? So now you're able to tell the story. Well, why is he getting it? Well, are you aware that he owns a couple of Wendy's out there in the Black community, and he's employing Black? Oh, okay. That's how we're gonna celebrate us. So this is gonna be our version of the Black ESPY Awards or the Black BET Awards for sports. And we're proud of that.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, let's see who take that over. You know, this is a great idea. Hey. But, you know, let me ask you this, guys, in the couple minutes that we've got left. This guy's silly. What did you guys think? I do want to talk a little bit about NBA playoffs because there is sort of a Black component there. You mentioned Zion, and I was thinking, man, how well that work out? I'm going to ask you guys something that has nothing at all to do with sports. It may have to do with slap boxing. But what did you guys think of the whole Will Smith and Chris Rock thing? And, I mean, we've had, like, a few weeks to digest it. But, you know, I mean, you can get ready to meet in Vegas to celebrate Black excellence. And I'm wondering, if we look at our forefathers, you know, Jackie Robinson and, you know, all the things that we're trying to regret, is that a level of progress when you could kind of have this thing on, you know, international television and have, you know, this kind of thing occur in front of a global audience? You know, have we sort of, you know, is that some kind of, is that some kind of benchmark?
So, wow. Dave, since I spoke last, Dave, you go first then.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out if you ask if it's a benchmark in a positive or negative way, because when it happened, Bill, the first, and I was in the other room. My wife said, "You wouldn't believe what just happened." I said, "When I walked in and she rewound the television for me, my first thing was embarrassment."
Yeah.
Because, you know, I looked at it again from the white perspective and understanding the Academy and the racist nature that they've conducted their business over a bunch of years. It's like, here they go again. You know, you give them a little bit and they want to act up. And so that was the first thing that came to mind in that. But I also understand the human emotion, particularly as it relates to those you love, is a powerful thing. And we as Black people are more emotional than anybody. You know, if you're going to curse me out, I'm going to curse you. You know, white people, as I tell Gary all the time, I can screw you over and have lunch with you the next day.
Right.
You talk about my wife. Not only I want to smack the mess out you, you know, I want to keep doing it until they pull me off of you. And so whatever was going on in Will Smith, as they talk about, who knows, you know, the dynamics of what he's going on in his life that led to that. But I looked at it as a form of embarrassment because, you know, we should do better. And, you know, if karma heads prevail and you don't like it, then you corner him in the back and, you know, you can do whatever you need to do. He'll pull his coat, chest him up or do whatever. But you just don't do it in front of the cameras because, you know, they're going to take it a certain way than what it was intended to be. And so that was my reaction to it. As well, everybody has their own, obviously, opinion.
Bill, I'll give you mine. I was at a meeting the other day, JP Morgan. They brought in over 40 people from across the country, different type of people. What's amazing is that, though, is I'm sitting there because I worked on Wall Street for over 20 years, and I'm at the front. And the first thing I did was look to see where's the Black person at. And I was sitting there thinking, wow, we're in 2022, and we're still doing the same thing. And I'm looking for the Black person so we can do it or not. Okay, I wanted to do or not.
Right.
All right. And it's amazing that we're still doing it.
Right.
Okay. But it is what it is. So when I saw what Will did, I was like, Dave, are you kidding me? Did you just seriously do that? So we just had a president, and I never say his name. Okay.
Right.
I'm not even going to lie. I call him Captain Idiot,
right,
who just set us back 30 years ago. Okay.
Right. Right.
And, all right. And for all these things to come back that we have tried to stop. And now, thank God, he's gone, you know, so to speak, at least for now. And Will, you come out there and you slap another Black man in international TV. Right. Are you serious? And then here's the thing, guys. Understand this. It's not every single person who are watching TV every single day. So you had some white person from Kentucky somewhere who just watched TV probably for the first time in a while because it's a national show and just saw a Black man do that and probably said, Willamy, look what they just did again.
Right.
What are you doing, Will?
Right.
What are you doing?
He said, if I would have done that, they would have put me in jail.
Right. And one of the first things I thought about was, you know, would he have done that to a white host?
Right.
You know,
and if you, Jamal, if you look at the world that we live in, you know, you could almost explain it because, you know, the psychological nature of where everybody's at pre and post COVID has everybody upside down.
Right.
So who knows what's going on and how you react to certain things.
Right.
You know, there's things going on, you know, just read where one brother shot another brother arguing over, you know, loading a truck,
right.
You know, things are going on now that, so I'm not here to figure out what was going through his mind. I just know, as Gary and I said, and you know, that the reaction to it is looked at a certain way. And they can do whatever they want to do and keep it moving tomorrow. And we can't.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? And this is why we need more things that Dave and I are putting together and other people from ABIS, you know, the champion of legend, because we need to be able to show people Black excellence. And that's what this show is going to be, you know, about. People don't see enough of that. And that goes back to what we talked about, changing the narrative. And it might be a little slow, but that's the way we're going to keep going. And if it's like I tell people all the time, right? If you build the foundation correctly, it'll be there for a long time. And that's what this is going to be. This is going to be the foundation of something big. And we have to keep moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, well, this has been a great, great conversation, man. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in Las Vegas. And Dave, looking forward to hearing more about the organization. You know, the question I did want to ask you is, you know, I was talking about this. I worked at Ebony Magazine like in 1974, from 74 to 78. And we did a thing called baseball, football, basketball roundup, you know, that we do the story about the NBA, maybe, and the premise was that, you know, because, you know, Johnson Publications, Ebony's been around for a long time, that there weren't a lot of Blacks in these sports. So we started doing these roundups just to let you know, who the Black folks were.
Yep.
And by the time I left, you know, we discontinued it. Because by the time I left doing the NBA roundup, it was like, you know, we ran out of space because these Black players, NFL, all these Blacks. And my question is, when we're talking about Black head coaches and all that, remember, and you got even in basketball, you know, when you had, you know, quotas and that kind of stuff, at what point sort of do we start counting, you know, stop counting, you know, when we look at the NCAA head coaches or even the NBA and NFL head coaches, at what point do we do what we do? We don't even talk about, can you play cornerback anymore? Because the entire defense is Black. Or, you know, or we don't talk about the NBA anymore because the entire NBA is probably Black players. So at what point do you think we stop counting? Stop counting head coaches.
I hope it's when my great grandson is my age.
Yeah,
that's my hope, because it doesn't have, you know. So I'm proud. I just left the Big East last year, and next year there's going to be 7 out of 11 coaches in the Big East Conference that will be Black.
Wow.
That is my mental. But at the same point in time, in the Pac-12, there's zero.
Right,
it's zero.
Well, there's always work to be done because, you know, and I say this generationally, Bill, you are, you know, probably somewhere you're older than me, but we're from the same, the 60s and beyond the 70s.
Right.
So our parents were born in the 40s, the 30s and 40s.
Right.
Your grandparents, who you probably learned a lot from, either through your parents or through directly from them, were born at the turn of the century.
Right.
You know, and their parents were enslaved.
Right.
And so not that long ago that those narratives match with what goes on today in our world and in the white establishment's world. So it's going to be a long time, if at all, before the narrative changes to equality. You know, so whenever you put your guard down, there's a punch coming.
Right.
So we could never put our guard down. We can never stop screaming about what is fair and not fair in hiring practice and every other level of sports.
Right.
And Bill, take a look at this. There are less Black baseball players now than there were 10 years ago.
Exactly.
So, you know, so to Dave's point, we can't stop. We can't take our foot off that pedal. We have to continue to hang in here. And that's the reason why you still have organizations like NAACP. Although I like to maybe for them to change their name, you know, from, you know, color people to something else.
Right.
But the point though is that this is why we have to be here to stay. And we have to continue to educate and grab more people, get more people to be members and do these award shows and things of nature so people can see us in a better light. It's just amazing how some things people don't know. When I put a video out and I said, hey, white people, I wish your ancestors would have, you know, would not have burned down Black Wall Street, okay? You know, a lot of white coaches called me and said, Gary, I didn't know anything about that. Tell me more. They don't know. So we can't stop.
Yeah. As Big John used to say, you know, he just in these conversations, he said, it's not over and it'll never be over.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah. Yeah. There's this famous Miles Davis that did this album for Jack Johnson. And that's what it was called, Jack Johnson. And at the very end of it, he had this great groove. And then it kind of slows down and it has Jack Johnson's voice. It's actually James Earl Jones. James Earl Jones. He said, I'm Black. Never let me forget it. I'm Black, all right. And I'll never let you forget it. So,
That's it.
Hey, man, listen, man, this has been so great having you guys on the show. You know, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, for being a guest, enlightening us. Appreciate everything you guys do. You know, keep holding it down. You know, good luck to my man Brian. That's where I last saw you, Gary. Right at the Brian at the
yep.
That
Brian Flores.
Flat floor, Brian,
emergency
Brian
meeting.
Flores. Yeah.
Yep.
You know. So you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man. Like so. You know, we're fighting it on all fronts. You guys are fighting it on all fronts. So, you know,
thank you. That's right.
And Bill,
he's going to get an award, too. He's getting the Champion of Change, the Sonny Vaccaro Champion of Change Award. How about that?
Right.
So that's why we have to keep fighting a good fight. Thank you for having us on. Yeah. It was a pleasure. I enjoyed this. And we're going to see each other soon. Bill, I don't know if you golf, but, you know, Dr. J and Jim Thorpe are going to be there, too. So they're going to be golfing on Friday morning. Okay. I don't know if you golf.
I do not golf. But, you know, Jim Thorpe went to Morgan. Jim Thorpe went to Morgan.
Wow.
He actually played football.
I didn't know that.
He played football for a minute, and then he said, fuck this. And next thing we knew, he's Jim Thorpe, you know. I remember we're down there, you know, the plantation is at HBCUs too. And I remember being down there at practice, you know, down on the field, and then before practice, looking up, and two of the assistant coaches, Jesse Thomas and Nate Taylor, you know, they were like coach, older brothers. And they were up there golfing. They were like teeing off, hitting golf balls, you know, into the field. And we actually had a course, a golf course. And I kicked myself now. I said, man, you know.
How about that?
I should have been doing that instead of being down here.
How about that?
Field. I should have been up there with Jim Thorpe and those guys hitting the damn golf balls. My life could have been changed. So anyway,
that's fact. All you had to do is hit that little ball, Bill. Damn it! That's all you had to do.
All I had to do. Yeah, I'll just walk.
And you got.
You guys have the
golf outing. You had your first annual, I think, last summer, and you got the second annual golf event coming up in August, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Yep. Kenny Smith, Jason William from the Nets is going to be part of that. We also have Raquel Oden. Who is pretty high up with J.P. Morgan. She's going to be, you know, honored, you know, also. So we're Katrina Adams used to play tennis and was the former president of the USTA.
Yeah.
So we're part of that. You know, we're going to be honoring her also. So, yeah, listen, we're trying to let people know who we are. And it's not going anywhere.
All right. Well, hey, Gary, thank you so much. Dave, thank you guys so much. And
thank you.
Looking forward to staying in contact.
You got it.
Thanks for having us. Thank you. Appreciate you always.
All right, guys.
All right.
Appreciate you. Take care.
Right. Hey, that was great. Two great guests, man. Doing really, really good things. But just kind of reminds you that, you know, the struggle continues from one decade to another. It's just, you know, Jamal, when your sons are like in their 30s, hopefully they'll be, you know, talking about, you know, some variation of this, you know.
Right,
hopefully they will be beneficiaries of it in terms of being presidents and whatever, but say that ain't enough. You know, got to be more. It ain't enough. Got to be more.
No, I mean, if there's anything history has taught us, like you said, the oppressors are not trying to give up what they have that easily.
Right.
And just like Dave Leto said, if you put your guard down, you're going to get punched in the face. So you got to keep that guard up. And I'm sure in 30 years from now, we're going to be fighting for something.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, listen, man, another great, great show. Thanks for pulling it together. And we'll see you next week. I guess by next week, man, we have to have another NBA segment.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We got to talk Kyrie. We got to talk about James Harden. We got to talk about Ben Simmons. We got to talk about – I mean, that'll be old news because all those teams might be out by then. But
and then Doc, if they lose, oh, my God.
Oh, man. Oh. And they're playing – Doc is playing tonight, game six.
I know. Yes, oh, brother. Whew. Man. Who knows?
Wait, before we leave, you gotta this the Nets can't sign Kyrie to a big extension.
Well, which means they will. You know, I mean, even black folks are saying, man, you can't do that. And then, you know, I'm sure Kyrie's people will put the George Floyd guilt on him, you're gonna do this to a brother. And blah 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 blah. Yeah. And they say, you're just doing this because I'm a black man standing up for myself. You know, we'll give you 10 years.
Oh, my God.
Now, you know they're going to do that. We'd be stuck with this cat for another 4 years. Although, if they give him 4 years, he may not play.
That's exactly.
That's
on them. They want to give him 4 years and pay him for 4 years. So he plays about the equivalent of 1 year. That's on them.
And Ben Simmons, the all-invisible team.
Oh, my God.
Ben Simmons, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden. We'll put them all on one squad.
I'm embarrassed to be from Brooklyn right now.
Yeah, well,
all I can say.
Well, you are. So, yeah, we can talk about that because I'm sure there's going to be more of that news as we go out.
All right, wait, Bill. I got to ask you before we leave. You know, we talked about this last episode. Have you been watching Winning Time?
Hell yes.
So you like it. It's entertaining.
It's very entertaining. You notice Magic went up and whipped out his thing on he's got his own.
I watched the first three episodes of Magic's thing, and that's good also. But you know, Magic's thing is it's a different story. Magic's story is only part of Winning Time. But you know, there's a lot more to Magic's story as we know, later on.
Right. Right, right. So yeah, I mean, I guess the takeaway from that thing is tell your own story.
Right, and you know the first episode of Magic's thing where he's talking about the Lakers and stuff. A lot of that corroborates what Winning Time is saying. Like he talks about carrying the boombox everywhere. He talks about having conflict with Kareem. He talks about Cookie. So I mean, everything he talked about in his documentary kind of linked up with what Winning Time was saying. I told you last week, everybody in Winning Time is a caricature. You know what I mean? So
right, I saw Norm Nixon do an interview, and he said that the thing where he played Magic at the Playboy had never happened.
Yeah, yeah. So they made some stuff up now,
So yeah, no. But to answer your question, yeah, watch it. I guess I gotta suck it up to watch Magic.
Are you caught up? Are you caught up on Winning Time? You got more? Are you?
No, I still got. I'm behind a little bit.
Okay.
I'm actually when that coach came. Who the fuck is Jack McKinnon?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm there. I'm at that episode where he comes and everybody's like,
and it gets better. It's gotten better pretty much most episodes.
Yeah. So more of that story that I got to write my own book and have it picked up. Or have the book that I've already written picked up.
Yeah, the book you've already written. Come on, man, that has to be picked up. Somebody, it takes. It's going to take. I don't know. We got to find somebody who.
Come on, Carmelo. Carmelo's group got it. Y'all going to dribble or shoot?
Right. Know? Right.
So, all right. Enough of that. So everybody, stay safe. Continue to be vigilant. If you haven't been vaccinated, get vaccinated. Continue to wear your mask. Social distance. I know the illusion is that this is over, but it ain't over. So stay safe and continue to pray. Take care, everybody. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.